Did not plan on going here today, but here we are. Conversation largely focuses on Coach Doyle. Obviously, his interview, first public one, came out last week. I'll be doing a separate podcast on that by myself. Me and Coach Lima have a conversation. We were both there during the vast majority of the years where racial discrimination was alleged. We have a pretty open and free-flowing conversation about that, and hopefully you guys enjoy. Let's have a day. Let's go. This will be good to start the 5-10-5 show. Welcome back, everybody. Maybe a very exciting day here as we start with this. This will be the first promotion I've really done. I've talked about it like once on the Wash Up Walk-Ons feed. Right before COVID hit, 2020, it's like, I did it for the month of February. I had this idea because I was getting pissed. We're getting real like inside baseball here for any nutrition geeks or people who want to geek out on some nutritional stuff. I was getting mad because I kept, maybe even had a couple people tell me like the calories in, calories out did not work. I know you're laughing right now because you understand
that it does work. Yeah.
That's in the end, that is how it works. But I also know that you understand and I both understand why people do get confused with it.
They maybe get confused because they're easily manipulated into believing what the truth actually is. When,
sure. Like. I love your response to that. Anyway, so I got pissed and I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to prove it in the most clear way possible. For every day of February, I'm going to eat a pint of ice cream for lunch. Just that's it. My lunch every single day is going to be a pint of ice cream. Side quest of that was I had a different brand/flavor every single day for 28 days. So I got to try out a whole bunch of different flavors and stuff. It was really great. Pint of ice cream every single day for lunch. But I'm going to equate for calories what is a deficit for me, right? Proving that basically it doesn't matter what I eat. I mean, I'm literally having 1,000+ calories of ice cream every day. But my total calories are less than what I'm burning. I'm burning more than I'm taking in. So I will lose weight and I will lose body fat during this 1 month period. And I did exactly that. I lost like 1.2% body fat and 2.5 pounds or something over the course of a month. And the way to document that was the Snap podcast.
Nice.
So I just did like a 5-week series of like, hey, here's the update. Here's like my thoughts around this and some other bigger topics. That's how we get into the 5-10-5 show today.
Getting in, folks.
And if you want, I'll switch over for anybody watching the YouTube version. I do a Snap podcast that's just me talking about CrossFit and nutrition and other stuff. And there's 180 episodes if you're interested. They're like 20 to 30 minutes a piece. I do it once a week. What's up, dude? How we doing?
Hawks lost, man. And it's like, goodness gracious. I'll tell you what, as a strength coach, when you start to see it, it's frustrating because every position coach thinks they're a strength coach. But when the strength coach wants to talk about the other side of the ball, nobody usually wants to hear them talk about it.
Mm.
That's real. Any of our listeners out there, that's real.
That's a nice little, that's a good little quote. Every position coach thinks they're a strength coach. But then they get pissed when the strength coach starts to talk about positional work.
Or wants to talk about it like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this guy over at this position, but you want to talk about exercises that should be done. The minute that goes the other way, people start getting, they start getting real offended, yet they have no problem trying to talk about the strength world.
Yeah. Is this a general reference to how our defense performed on Saturday?
No, this is in reference to the fact that in my opinion, this is Justin Lima speaking, it is a miracle that Caleb Johnson is able to run the ball as well as he is. And this is me playing. I played offensive line I mean, shoot, you run the ball and you have 7-8 guys in the box. Like, it's a miracle if he's getting first downs. You got to be able to play action, get the defense to soften up a little bit, and not being able to throw the ball, that's where it's coming from.
Well, and realistically, he didn't, like, outside the one play.
Correct. And Weissman talked about that. Like, I thought about that before. Weissman's like, because he was a running back. He's like, listen, yeah, you see a running back's average, you see his total, take away a big run to see what they really did.
Yeah.
And like, and I'm not, it's not a shot at him or the line. It's like, as the strength coach, you're just like, because you're so invested in these kids and you want to see them succeed, when they're not put in an opportunity to succeed, it just breaks your heart. And, and it's frustrating.
Speaking to a bigger issue that we've had the last couple years, not so much this year. It was sort of on highlight or on display on Saturday. I do think it is interesting. How do you determine how well a guy is doing if he's not put in the right position to succeed? And I think our line has caught a ton of flack from us included on this podcast over the last couple years.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
And we actually did, and it's me and Drake, it was unplanned. We sat down one day and sort of went back and looked at the recruiting classes of like 2018, 19, 20, 21, I think, when we did it.
Okay.
I think this was around 2022 or sometime when we did this podcast. And obviously the line has struggled the last few years. We've struggled. And we tried to decipher what the problem was there. And I think a lot of it was skill development. There was just talent issues relative to maybe our previous standard at Iowa, some of the previous lines that we've had. There was some recruiting misses. There was a couple unfortunate guys who either due to injury or some other factor just decided that football was no longer their thing. There was a couple transfers. There was a couple guys who left early, Werfs and Linderbaum, both guys who left early. So there was just, it was a conglomeration of many factors that led us to like that 22, 23 seasons where our line was just not a Big Ten offensive line. Part of that was that they weren't as good as they needed to be. Part of it, though, was, and pointed out plenty of times by many people in the Iowa fan base, is it's really hard for a line to block correctly or well or open up holes when it's 7-on-5.
Yes.
It's almost impossible. Yes. So it's not all their fault. And I think a lot of that was shown against Michigan State this weekend. It is interesting because we've done it this year. Minnesota was stacking boxes. Caleb Johnson was successful. We found holes. We were able to get it done. Washington, even a little bit against Ohio State at times, obviously against the other opponents, the non-con. But man, we could just not do a single thing versus Michigan State. And I don't know what specifically. I honestly thought we got bullied. It looked like we got bullied physically. And as a strength coach, from the strength conditioning side of that, that is not something you want to see during a football game. Like when it's a clear, they're bringing a different aggression and mentality and physicality to the game, throw out strategy and talent and all the other stuff. It's just, hey, who wants this more?
Mm-hmm.
That's tough to see as a strength coach. That almost feels personal, probably, at that point.
Yeah, it's really hard to see. And that's the unfortunate part, too, about it is, like, I read some stuff on Twitter.
Oh, no, don't do that. That's the worst thing you can do.
I disagree with, like, you got to, like,
I actually have a great comment from YouTube that I can read you after you get
so
done.
Somebody, like, I read somewhere, and it's going to go to a bigger topic, that apparently people had been saying that the O-line is worse since Doyle left. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, love this.
I didn't know that people had been saying that.
Oh, that's the narrative.
Okay. I don't understand how that can be the narrative. A, why is there even an offensive line coach to begin with? Okay. Let's start there. If the strength coach is the reason why the O-line coach is good, why do you need an O-line coach? Clearly that to think it's just that one side. Two, the strength and conditioning program. When I went and last visited in 2020, 22 or 21. It was when my wife's great aunt turned 95. I went and visited a lift in the summer, and 85 to 90% of it was the exact same. Like, so much so that when Ray was like, "Oh, what'd you think?" I was like, "Ray, it was kind of literally the same as when I left in 17. And he was like kind of proud about that. And I'm just like, things have changed. So like, to any of the listeners out there, chances are right now in week 8, they're doing something very similar that they used to do. So the lifting program probably hasn't changed very much.
Yeah.
And so it's like, to give the strength coach to say that the strength coach is the reason why the O-line is good. Again, like, that just is like, imagine being the position coach. Like, what, how, like,
counter to that, just to play a little devil's advocate, because I don't believe it's 0% chance. Is there a mentality kind of thing? Doyle spent a lot of time in practice kind of around the O-line, especially during team periods. I feel like he would hover mostly if he wasn't over by the strength coach camp. Like,
he was never over there. He was usually watching practice, because we would be doing, yeah, we would do the rehab, and unless he was rehab, like doing it with somebody or in
he was mostly watching practice. I felt like he was mostly around the line. Is there any sort of, how about this? Is there any sort of, this really gets to a bigger question, with Doyle leaving and he first public interview, since all that happened in 2020 last week, his words, he was very, very demanding of the players, thought, you know, there was a lot of, you had to be ultimately focused, couldn't let anything leak into your life other than faith, family, football, and school. It was demanding. You had to give up and sacrifice a lot more. Is there a mentality shift with Doyle leaving the program, maybe a little bit, where it was just like, they're just a little less disciplined, a little softer. There's just not that grit with him at the head of the culture. Is there an argument for that, where maybe that's the small leak that gets into the offensive line? Everything starts up front. What kind of mentality are they bringing to the game? Is there an argument for that at all?
Maybe. I don't really personally, because like, again, you heard him talk about it too, where he says he talks to Ray all the time. So chances are the words that Ray is saying to the team is what Doyle would have been saying. Yeah. So like, the two of them have very different personalities. So yes, like, mm-hmm. when you have a different personality, but chances are probably the same lift, probably the same words, because as he said, he talks to Ray all the time. So their narrative is different. And could it be part of it? Yes. But again, like, the players have to play, the coaches have to coach. Again, there could be a very little aspect of it, but again, it should be no more than, like, you don't, as a strength coach, you don't want to get all the credit for the team's success. No. And you don't want and so that's why I'm just like, cause you don't want the blame too. Cause if the team doesn't play well, then you have to own that too.
Right.
And so it's like, but yes, like, their personalities are completely different. My personality is different from, we all have a different personality. I caught, because again, it's like, well, then why even have an O-line? Like, that's just, to me, is where it's very difficult pill to swallow, because why only that one side of the ball? Why that one position? Why not the other positions that were affected by it? Because Doyle also used to work with the D-backs when we would do skills and drills.
We're not doing so good with the D-backs right now either, to be honest.
Oh, I don't know that. Well, I mean, like, the kid Castro, why wasn't the kid Castro playing? What's wrong with him?
Hurt.
What's hurt with him?
I don't know. I don't really look at that. I didn't see. I have no idea. I'm not sure. He was out. Huh. I don't know. I get where you're coming from, where on the inside, when you know how many hundreds of variables go into the product of Iowa football.
Yeah.
And you see on a daily basis, like, man, there's 100 plus players, 35, 40 staff members that go into this thing. How could the presence or whatever of one person really affect downstream, like, the entire mentality that an offensive line brings to a game? Or, but in the same sense, I don't think it doesn't matter, right? Because I think the sort of mentality and standard of, I don't know, standard of physicality that it requires in the Big Ten. I think there are strength coaches you could put in play for a Division I program. You could put in play in Iowa City where you'd be like, is this really the guy that we want leading the program? So I do Amen. Think it matters.
Hey, man, that's a really good point because there is, yeah, like if you have, yeah, you're right. I mean, if you do have somebody that is kind of soft, like you need, you like, I'll never forget when I was at Harvard, Tim Mullen said that stuck with me is the head strength coach is the heart, the head football coach is the brain of the operation. That's and like, I've kind of always operated that way. Like when I was at Towson with Rob, like Rob was a hard ass. So I didn't always have to be the hard ass. And like, you know, you have to kind of counter them, but like
sure.
you do have to establish a culture of ment. And that's the hard part about it too. Cause it's like, all right, if I'm the culture guy, then why am I only paid as the weight guy? Which getting back to the point of like, I have no problem with head strength coaches being, they need to be paid like coordinators, like, yeah. and anybody that like, yeah. that's how they should be paid. They're a coordinator.
You know what they are? Is they're the culture coordinator.
Like put that in the title then too. You know what I mean? Or like the job, like find a way to do that. So that way you can help.
I agree.
Figure out whatever the title, the pay is because position coaches and coordinators, they'll get paid more for recruiting and other things like that.
Yep.
We coordinate the weights, we coordinate the culture. So like that can help justify, but like, no, there's no reason why strength coaches shouldn't get paid what coordinators get paid. If they want to pay a DC $2 million or whatever the heck Brent Venables was making, like, you should be able to pay a head strength coach that.
Because you and I both know that during our time in Iowa City, Doyle was doing a lot more. His importance was felt in a lot of other places outside of like, are we doing 5x5? Are we doing 5x3? Or, you know, like it was a lot more than that. Right.
Yeah. Cause he would like, we would read books as a staff and then he'd be able to go up and tell KF like, hey, we should read, you know what I mean? Like, and try to shape things that way because you try to shape things. Ultimately, everything comes from the head coach. Let's start there.
Yeah.
So you have to find a way to affect change through the head coach or other coaches. If you can't get through to the head coach, if you know, hey, all right, I've tried to talk to KF about this and he's not listening. Who does KF listen to? Ah, Phil. All right, Phil. Hey, let me talk to Phil to try to get Phil to get through. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's just what you do as a leader.
Yeah, it's funny. It works at every level like that. Just to, you know, like a brand new specialist like has an idea or like has a question or something, and they go through like one of the specialists has been there through for a couple of years, and that specialist brings it to the, like when I was like a junior senior, they'd bring it to me like, hey, could you talk to coach about this, or should we do it? I'd talk to Coach Woods about it, and then maybe Coach Woods would mention it to Coach Ferentz. It's like, it's, you got to just go up the line and hope that it, like, you know.
And then you get so happy when it happens, because the number of times I would do that, I'd say, hey, coach, boom, 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 and I'd have an idea, he'd bring it up to KF, and then like I'd get to hear KF say something, or like when KF would read from the performance news that I wrote, it had to get approved by Doyle, and then he'd read it. I'd be like, yeah, like I'm talking to the team right now, like,
hell yeah.
Like, yeah.
My message, baby.
Yeah, like
no, but so I think the bigger conversation is like, you certainly can't just say that the offensive line is worse because Doyle's gone. That's not the only issue. It's maybe not even the primary issue.
But you can say it's a contributor, sure.
But it's a factor, it's a variable that maybe isn't directly relevant to the offensive line, although I do think he hung out with them more than anything. And he was an offensive lineman. I think he coached offensive line at some point.
He did some of that. His career got cut short due to injury at BU, but yeah.
Oh, really? Is that what he got hurt?
Yeah. Don't fully quote me on it, but I feel like after sophomore year, he stopped playing. BU doesn't have football anymore.
No.
But
just a boss.
I'm 90% sure he stopped playing after sophomore year.
Probably back squatting too much. I remember this is one of my favorite things. Didn't he used to power lift?
He did. Yep. And the whole strength staff, not the whole, Ray never did it, but like Frage and Allen, there's some old footage of that. That's part of the reason why like Joel, myself, and DeMarco kind of felt like it'd be kind of cool to do some of like that throwbackness of when it used to happen back in the day.
I remember when we were in the old complex. Right. So Jacobson.
Yeah.
We were in there and I don't know if it was like before an FMS or something. We had a little time where we were just like waiting around and Drake was doing bicep curls. Of course.
Of course.
Like, what do you think? You know, and Doyle walked up and said something like, whatever you're curling, I can do more than you. And Drake was like, no, you fucking can't. Like, I'm stronger than you. And Doyle goes, okay, pull a dumbbell off the rack. And Drake pulled one off and like curls it. And they're getting to the point where like they're using a lot of swing.
It's a hang power curl.
Yeah, it's a hang power curl. And it was like, I don't know, a 75 or an 80 pound dumbbell. Like, that's a tough one to curl, right?
Yeah.
And Doyle rips the 100 off the rack. And he swung it, but like he curled it a little bit, like with the momentum. And he just looked at Doyle and everyone was like, all right, fuck. I mean, it is what it is.
You know, what's funny to counter to that is it caught up to him because later in his career during our GPP, when we're doing the tire flips, he was trying
to. Did he try a tire flip?
He tried one of the shorter tire, the smaller ones to like, cause somebody was struggling with it and he was trying to show him how to do it. Oh, homeboy tears his bicep.
He did tear his bicep, didn't he?
And he did it when he was trying to, like, he felt it. And then like the rest of the day.
That's funny as hell.
Uh huh.
Just probably, you know, after 30 years old, probably best to not just jump into high intensity things. If you haven't progressed, do them. I watched Deshaun Watson pop his Achilles yesterday.
Ooh.
Or 2 days. 2 days ago. Did you see that? You watch any NFL?
I did not watch. No, I did not. But I saw that. And I just can't. I mean, I can't believe that the Cleveland Browns decided to pay somebody that much money that had never really proven to be a winner. That was
unbelievable.
The same thing with the Miami Dolphins or the Jaguars. Like, why are you paying these people that have never actually proven over time to be worth that money? Like, I'm sorry.
When I watch somebody pop their Achilles, it's one of the, like, I can feel it happen in my own leg. It's so bad. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting conversation. It's funny that narrative got back to you though. That like the Doyle. I think maybe even less than the O-line, and this is just me being, you know, like you're sitting on the chair and you're old and you're like, these generations are softer than me. You know, like. Kids are getting soft nowadays. I do feel like, and part of it was they had to, some of the stuff that happened in 2020. In fact, you know, maybe the only legitimate stuff in my mind was the fact that like, yeah, we were probably a little too disciplined or nitpicky over some things that we didn't need to be. And the reins of discipline had to loosen a little bit when all that stuff happened in 2020. If not for just a certain amount of time, and I don't know if it's reined back in. I don't know if guys are walking around the complex now as, I mean, I'll just say it. I don't know if guys are walking around the complex now as disciplined to the one focus goal as we were. And that's a massive thing to say and probably a bullshit thing to say. And if I was on the inside right now, I'd be like, okay, fuck you. We're pretty disciplined. Like, we're trying our best here, but it's hard for me to believe that people are as dialed in as we were with Doyle at the helm, like, because everything was just so, it was paramount. Like, it, nothing else mattered.
I have a legitimate question for you.
Yeah.
I don't understand how, in my lived experience, how discipline is a race thing. I legitimately don't understand this from somebody that worked in Baltimore.
A race thing as in black versus white?
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't understand. And that's coming from somebody that worked at Towson, which we had a Towson address, but it's near Baltimore. A colleague of mine who is technically my boss, worked with the basketball team. He's a black guy.
Yep.
And he, like, held the line with discipline on the guys and said, yeah, like, you need, like, discipline is a, like, I don't understand, like, if you're doing something where it's, again, that's my legitimate question, is if you're just, if a lift group starts at 7,
yeah,
it's 7, it doesn't matter, like, if it's, sure, you can communicate if you're late or not, or wearing certain color, like wearing what team issued gear. Like, whatever your rules are, and same thing, like, the other, when he left, he's now a head strength coach at LSU. The other basketball strength coach who's still there, like, his thing with his rules where it needs to be clear or communicated clear and consistent.
Yeah.
So if you communicate you communicate what the rules are, it's communicated, it's clear, they know what it is, and then it's consistent. There's never, like, you just never, I don't know.
I think the answer to your question is it's not race-based. And this is where the situation gets touchy with Iowa and my former teammates who came out and had some quarrels is two different issues got conflated there. Like, I don't think if you sat down Jordan Lomax or James Daniels, who both had things to say, some thoughts on the side of like the players, and again, this was I think one of the biggest whole things that happened with that was there were some white guys who had some things to say too, but for them it obviously wasn't race. They're the same. They're white just like Doyle. I think that, in my honest opinion, I think that the state and the nature of the time, George Floyd, all that happened at that point, it was a very volatile time in society.
Yep.
And I think that a couple bad actors in that whole thing really ruined the message that James and Lomax and some of the credible guys who had credible, whatever you want to call it, credible changes that they would have liked to seen in the program. I think that a couple guys that I won't name because it's not worth it came out and said that it was totally race. It was all about race. And that just immediately shifted the perspective and it ruined everything. Because after that point, it was, oh, it's cut Doyle or the strength staff. Because it wasn't just Doyle. Like, you guys in part got thrown in with that.
Oh, actually. Really?
Like, it was the staff in general. It was the entire staff. It was Coach Ferentz. It was the other white guys on the team. Like, everybody got thrown under the bus of, oh, they're just racist. And I think it was more, a lot of the things that they would talk about were, it wasn't so much about having to be disciplined on something. It was the specific things we were choosing as rules, right? I think, again, hairstyles. Like dreads.
Hairstyles were never anything that you'd lose points in the Hawkeye Championship with. Now, Doyle didn't like if people, like, dude, when I grew a beard, he hated that. Or the Paulsons, he hated long hair. Like,
you're preaching to the choir here, but like, people on the outside, they think they immediately jump to like, oh, you can't have, like, black guys can't have dreads, whatever. Like, and I just think back to like all of the African American teammates I had that had dreads, and we were totally okay with it. No one had an issue with it. The music that we played, they were like mad because they couldn't play their music in the weight room.
I was mad I couldn't play it either because Doyle only played AC/DC. Like,
right. I mean, he played his playlist. They took it as like, oh, Doyle only plays his like 80s white music. And like, again, there's just a lot of these things.
It's interesting you say that about the staff because, like, for me, I know I had to talk about it with my team at Towson. So we're all remote because, like you said, it was COVID.
Yeah.
And then this news breaks. I'm like, Rob, I got it. Like, next team meeting.
This was a question I was going to ask you with Doyle coming out and be doing his first public interview last week. You know, this, like, you were a part of the staff when a lot of these claims were being made, right?
Yeah.
Pretty
much all of it.
All of it. Yeah.
Same time your career I was there too.
And those were the exact times and players that were making complaints, basically.
Yes.
So I wondered, like, when all this happened, and this is going back to 4 years ago, but even how maybe you think about this now, like, did you take this personally at all? Or, like, obviously you just said you had to address it. You're like, I'm a part of this in some way. How did you process that? And because I know when it first happened, Kevin on this podcast very openly, as a captain of the team, is our senior year. He was our special teams captain, if you remember, right?
Yep.
In the trying to process everything that was happening and like giving validation to our teammates' feelings of like, oh, okay, well, these guys are saying that they were unhappy in the program. Like, did I have some kind of ownership in that? Kevin was pretty broken up about that. He's a little bit more empathetic than I am. I didn't feel that as much because I thought that I had a pretty good read on how the things were operating. But Kevin took a real hard look and was like, it makes me feel like shit because I felt like I had ownership in that program. And if my teammates felt like they were discriminated against, like, should I have stepped up? Should I have said something like that? How did you feel as a assistant under Doyle, who's being discriminated or not discriminated, being alleged all these things during that time? Like, is that weird for you?
It was weird. And I did feel that way that Ward did too. I even actually texted Lomax afterwards. I was like, listen, I had no idea. Like, because Lomax, I felt like I had a really good relationship with Lomax. I remember even something as simple as when he stepped into his captainship role in the Hawkeye Championship of 2014 before 2015, like they changed their team name and like he was recovering from an ankle injury and I helped him rehab it in 15. Lomax knew the guy who was my assistant at Towson. And so did Cooper. And they both played with Joe.
They were both assistant. out east.
And they were like, oh yeah, Joe, like Lima's a good dude. Like, and that helped me get hired.
Yeah.
And so I remember reaching out to Lo and saying something similar, like, dude, if I did anything, please, I don't think I did. If I like, please, I feel bad for you with that. And then, like I said, being at Towson, I was like, Rob, I need to address the team. And the same, I had to tell the players, like, listen, I worked for the guy. Yes. Did I ever see him do things that were black people here, white people there? No. Does that mean that things didn't happen behind closed doors based off of opinions of what people said? Maybe that did happen. So, but I did tell them, like, listen, the way that he led with fear was not the way that you should lead. And I don't believe that that is the way that I lead, because you can still be tough without being, leading with fear. I think you can lead with love instead of leading with fear and still be demanding.
And there was, that's maybe a good way to put it. There was a lot of the way things were set up is you should be scared if you do something wrong, because, and maybe scared isn't the way you should feel.
Correct. Because you now feel, you're playing tight.
You should feel bad in a way. There should be some negative emotion that you feel if you aren't accountable to the rules, the standards, your teammates, your coaches.
Yeah.
Fear, especially
if you have the right people on your team that are like for you and your wife, like you're like, you don't want to do, like you would feel bad that you let the team down because like, oh, my wife loves you, instead of like, oh shit, she's gonna, you know, beat me or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so to me, that's where it's, I had to talk to the players about it and it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. And I'll tell you what, one of the best things, and I never forget it, three of the guys took the time individually. Like, I think they did a group FaceTime. They FaceTime like, coach, like, you are not racist. You're not any, like, dude, we love you. Like, you're our coach. We love you. And so that was a really good feeling. And I see it from multiple angles, because it's not one where, like, for Coach Doyle, who, if he never, again, if the, never having that and being scapegoated, that's not a good feeling. Right. Like to be blamed for something that you didn't do, like that is difficult. But again, his greatest strength was also his greatest weakness, in where, because he was so stubborn and could like get things going, he had a hard time trying to admit when he was wrong on things. And like, there was times for me where we would do something, he didn't know what we were doing, and he would blow up on me or somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
And then would never actually admit that he was wrong, even though he was.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a dynamic situation and thing that happened. I'm actually doing we were the only ones to talk about this player wise, like on an open forum, basically, when this happened back in 2020. We had Lomax and Daniels on the show for like an hour and a half and sort of talked it out. And I wish we were our age now.
Ooh.
With maturity over the last 5 years, four and a half, 5 years, to have a better discussion. And I'm still not, I talk about all the time how like I'm just the worst podcast host. I'm just not good with words, and I talk for a living, basically. I really wish I could describe things more concisely and not take forever to tell stories or get through like explanations, but I'm just horrible at it. I listen to other people do it and I'm just in awe. I just wish I was better. I try to get better for those that care. But it's just like, man, it's such a deep, there's so many layers to it. I'm doing so when this podcast came out last week where he was interviewed by Keith Murphy, everyone comes to us and they're like, hey, let's get him on the walk-ons next. Like, let's get Coach Doyle on the walk-ons, or like, can we get a reaction podcast? What did you think of Doyle's interview? So this week, which this comes out on Friday, so maybe it's already out, or next week I'm going to be doing like a little solo episode on my thoughts of the podcast and probably an update on my thoughts on the whole situation 4 years later. I do think that the word scapegoat is probably a good word for sort of what happened with him losing his job, because he wasn't the only one identified in that whole thing.
Correct.
And it was KF on some level. It was Brian.
I believe I read Seth's name.
Seth was in there for a while, which is just fucking unbelievable, by the way, if you think about it. Like, you want to talk about a guy who cares about every single player, regardless of what they look like or where they come. I mean, Jesus. I mean, every guy on our staff, I feel like, did that. But Seth.
Yeah, I don't think any coach. And that's like, I don't think any coach did. And I mean, I still talk to Coach Doyle. Like, we don't speak as often as he said he and Ray do. Like,
I haven't talked to him since they moved.
I invited him on the Cheeky Midweeky not to even talk about any of this. It would be like, hey, let's truly just talk about training. Let's talk about the fact of how you were, you know, innovative and how you could do these things. And I had no plan on talking about any of that with him. I just wanted to talk about, you know, training because the narrative out there is still only the negative, but they're like,
yeah, well, and this is what's interesting to me is, man, I don't know if you know how weird it is for me to have this conversation with you about Coach, all three of us there from 13 to 16. Now, like, I never would have pictured this, but this is like almost cathartic in a way. Doyle's a rock. He is a hard outer shell. And maybe a rock all the way through. Like, there's not a lot of soft, he's old school Boston. Like, they're just hard people. Right. He's a tough guy. He's old school. Hard to admit when he's wrong. If he is wrong about something, you just said that. I never got to see this, but like, you know, cause we were in a player role. It's not like he was going to ask us for help a lot, but like, you know, this like alpha kind of mentality of like, I don't know if he was a guy who really asked for help a lot with a lot of things. You know, maybe just like the stereotype, like he's a hard, like David Goggins, stay hard. I think that one of the biggest things from his interview last week was you talk about the narrative still being about mostly the negative things, right? And Doyle's what, 55 years old?
I have no idea.
He's not old. No. I think the guy would still like to work and use what he likes to do, which is his passion for strength conditioning. And he said in a little bit of a roundabout way last week, he's like, you know, part of what I'm doing this interview with you, Keith, when he's talking to Keith Murphy, is because the narrative hasn't really changed. It hasn't had an opportunity to change much, which would allow me to get back into, you know, working. Like, and I'm like sitting there, I'm like, well, if he wants a little platform to talk to the people, Coach Doyle, do I have something for you? Right.
But here's the thing. Like, I do think that he was talking, like, you, when you hear him talk, it, you know, that you hope that there was change, because like you say, okay, sure, it has a tough outer shell, but like, you have to learn how to talk to different people in different ways. Like, you can't just communicate, this is how I talk. Like, you have to change based off of who you're speaking to.
Yeah.
And I learned that when I was at Harvard, because if I had to go from training the football team and the women's water polo team was in next, and then it was ski,
like, different.
They busted my chops. Like, dude, every team isn't the football team on max out day.
Yeah.
You got to calm down and learn how to talk to different people.
I could just see you in there with the,
they're like, dude, take
women's water polo doing max out squats. And you're just like, lower, come on.
Yeah. And they're like, so I learned it at an early age, and like, you really hope that it has changed, because you have to learn again. It's all like, I mean, if we're reading all these books about everybody communicates, few connect, like, read the book, but then put it into practice. Like, that's the thing that you'd really hope to hear, that there has been that actual change.
Listening to him, I've listened to it twice. I'll listen to it probably a third time when I go to outline the podcast I'm going to do about it. He does sound different. Sounds a little different to me. You don't think so? I mean, to some extent, he's the same.
He's the same person, but he sounds a little different. Again, like, it was golf ball teed up for him to like just take complete ownership of everything when he was like, when Keith asked him, like, hey, who, like, you know, who do you have to blame? he eventually said, like, you know, I could have been better. But like the first word, like, again, if we're reading Extreme Ownership, first words out of your mouth, hey, I could have been better about how I communicated with everybody. You know what I mean? Like it could, that could have just been the very, and like, that was what I listened to.
I agree. However, and you know, better people than me out there, plenty of them, right? If what had happened to me, if what happened to Doyle on a national level, like the essence of who you are, your, like your identity just gets stripped down publicly and nationally as hard as it did for him, it would be very, very, very tough for me to not house a couple ounces of resentment and fight for who I am as a person when I know who I am, right? And so when I get it, when someone says, who do you like, he did start the question of who do you blame with, I don't blame anybody.
Correct. Fair. Very fair. I just, me personally, would have been like myself. Like that's again, me. That, yeah. So,
but could you see how answering immediately with, I blame myself, as if I say this, people are going to take that as an admission of guilt.
Because like you said too, like, I mean, shoot, could have gone on the offensive and like, all right, again, this is all easy to say because it's 4.5 years later, but like, all right, hey, I didn't do it. Like lawsuit against the school. Sure. I'm going to add one to it. Like lawsuit. I did wrongful termination lawsuit. Like I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, he did, by the way, say that he wanted this to go to court. Like he was very adamant. Correct. Like I wanted this to go to court. Like KF wanted this to go to court too, by the way. The whole thing about him and KF not talking makes
me, that's so unfortunate.
Makes me want to puke.
That's so unfortunate.
And I'll expand on that in the reaction podcast that I do on this topic at a whole, but we've probably exhausted this too long.
Yeah. But here's the thing, to say too long, like, cause there are other strength coaches that worked for him. They had to have the conversation with their teams about it. Like you said, it is still sore because, you know, to see somebody that you care about go through things is never easy. To see players, coaches that you worked with, you know, because like you said, there were strength coaches on the staff, myself included, and other coaches that, you know, face the wrath, as Drake said before, that, you know, being in the Doyle doghouse is never fun, right? And like,
yeah,
it's almost impossible to drag out of it. And so there's other coaches. So it is, I think it is important just to highlight, especially considering the fact that it did get brought up in the mainstream media in our world.
Yeah. Boys got to bounce back this week.
They got to get that sense of urgency.
I thought last week that they would have it. Maybe I was wrong. I don't know what happened on Saturday. Could be a rough day for Northwestern if there's some piss and vinegar flowing through the Hawkeyes this week of like, okay, well, we got embarrassed by Michigan State. Time to go absolutely unleash on Northwest. Like this whole week is going to be.
Today, this is going to be a grind of a week for them. Them boys are practicing hard right now.
Yeah, they're putting the work in. So, I had a whole topic today.
Topic supposed to be?
I was going to ask you what game day looked like for a strength coach.
Oh, here, real quickly, game day for a strength coach. Back in the day, we used to do the recruiting pitch for the kids. Then we'd go over to the locker room. We would take you guys through the game day primer. I guarantee you the game day primer hasn't changed since I left. Then when the players are done with the primer, they'll go through their own warm up. Players will put on their shoulder pads. We'll help the players go outside for warm up. We watch, go into the locker room at, you know, before the game, give the player, help push fluids and food, whatever the players need. If they want us to stretch them, help them put on their shoulder pads. We're essentially just there to support the players. Game day, we're making sure the players are behind the line. What they should be doing is charting work to rest ratio, halftime, push fluids again, whatever they need.
Maybe the question should be, what should game day look like for a strength coach?
It should look like that. Like realistically, it should be nice and laid back, help the players get there, try to make sure the players don't do too much before the game, because that's a bunch of their anxiety and the coach's anxiety. Like they do a full game before the warm-up, so trying to just help coaches and players calm down. It should look like where they don't go and warm up without their, they should go warm up without their pads on, especially with all the gear that they have. So they go warm up and then they come back in at that like 30 minute mark before the game, then put your shoulder pads on. So then that way you're not sitting around and just waiting. You know, we'll get a pregame lift in for sure. Come on now. Like, don't get that twisted. Have a bunch of caffeine before and at halftime. So you're
a bunch of caffeine.
LeVar and I used to share a spike. That was special. Yeesh.
Caffeine.
But again, it's very simple. Game day for us, we're there to facilitate and help the coaches.
You're the guide hand on the basketball.
That's it. Seriously. We're there. You guys are playing the game. We're going to help make sure that the players are behind the line. We shouldn't really be noticed. Sure. We'll be there and cheering the boys on, but we're really just in a very, very support role. Document your work to rest ratio so you can talk about it with the players. You'll collect the GPS after the game, obviously put it out before the game, but yeah, it's very kind of cut and dry.
There you go. Hit a overhead squat PR.
285 or what?
Three plates.
Holy, I'm not surprised. I thought about you yesterday what day was it? It was Saturday. I was training the kids at Goldfinch and we had overhead squats. And somebody was like, bro, they were probably like doing you. It was like a clean grip overhead squat. Like, listen, get your hands wider because you're going to be able to, use your, the closer your hands, it's more requires for upper back mobility.
Yeah.
And the minute I was saying it, I was like, Kluver.
I was messing around just doing party tricks the other day, warming up when I was with Cole. We were working out and I can cross
cross
like that, hold and squat. With I don't know, I haven't gone up with it yet, but it's the only thing I'm good at in life. So I'm just gonna keep running it. I'm gonna try and do a 400-pound overhead squat, I think. That'd be sick.
That's
my shoulders will never hold it. Getting old. Anyway, there's a huge podcast, 5-10-5 show. This is gonna be I'm gonna have to clickbait title this one so everybody comes and listens to it. Drop it early or something. I don't know. What a whirlwind. Now I got to go do that Doyle podcast and continue to talk about it because the people want it. People want it. So maybe I'll bring Drake back for it. Anyway, 5-10-5 show. Hopefully after you listen to this with me and Lima, the Hawks can grab a win against Northwestern. Because if they don't, I might have to shut this whole operation down. That's all we got. We'll talk to you next week. See ya. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.